After 25 years in corporate, I'm currently taking a break from work, or should I say from formal employment, to reflect, to reinvent, and to rejuvenate. This sabbatical was 10 years in the making. After deciding that I didn't want to go through another brutal company restructure, I'm pursuing my own interests and experimenting with how I want to spend my time into the future. Welcome to the new series of On Change podcasts. In these episodes, I'm talking to people who have taken breaks from work for various reasons. I want to understand why they did it, what they did on their breaks, what they learned from the experience, and how they are taking these lessons back into their work lives. Today in the studio, I have Thea Weeks. Welcome to the studio, Thea.
Thanks so much, Pietro. I can definitely relate to what you've said in terms of after 25 years needing to take a break and having had a 10-year process to prepare for that. I personally have also had three different breaks in my career. So thank you for the opportunity to share with your listeners.
So before we get into the actual conversation, introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about what you're doing right now.
I'm the environmental, social and governance lead for MPA Mot Africa. We are predominantly an engineering and development firm with a passion for development and infrastructure development in Africa. I must say that's not where my career started. It's always had a golden thread in terms of legal compliance and then blending that with ESG requirements and helping a plethora of clients enhance their performance across the spectrum. So although I started mostly in the extractive industry, oil and mine and gas, it's evolved over the years and I focus largely on renewable energy at the moment.
You've taken three breaks in your career. Why did you take these breaks and how did you know that you needed to take them?
I really believe, and I mean, I can only speak about my own lived experience. In my instance, it was different seasons. So at the start, I've always been very driven, followed the standard path in terms of studies and career and being hugely committed. And I never took a gap year as a young student or just after I matriculated. So early in my career, I studied, I continued advanced studies and then worked extensive hours. And within the first 7 years, I thought, you know what, I actually want to plow back and I want to do volunteer NGO type of work. I really want to give back what I've learned. I want to plow back and invest. So that was the one break, which ended up being a 5-year break and an investment really in a different sphere. And then the second break was when I expected my son and I decided that at the time I was spending extensive times, you know, visiting different sites, various areas in Africa, traveling extensively, which is really lovely if you're young and you have that flexibility. But when you have a child, I think I wanted to be able to just focus on this newborn baby and to be able to invest without the burden of feeling that I'm letting the team down because I can't travel extensively. And then the last opportunity came where I was traveling in Cameroon for a project. I really, really felt ill. And at the time, I thought, you know what, I'm not going to burden the client, the staff. I'm not even going to tell anybody I'm feeling horribly ill. I will travel back to South Africa and see a doctor here, not thinking that if you have such high levels of fever and inflammation and infection, that you should actually not be traveling. And I lost hearing in my left ear and then also impacted hearing in my right ear. So I had to adjust to the fact that mid-career, you're sort of at your peak and suddenly you have a disability. I used to engage and have like 1,000 people in one go, sometimes up to 5,000 at different events or public participation meetings or conferences, etc. And suddenly you can't hear and you just feel that your career has come to an absolute end. How can you be in stakeholder engagement or engage at that level if you can't even sit in a board meeting and hear the conversation? So yes, I took three different breaks in my career for different reasons.
And they're all quite different reasons. They're very distinct. My first question is around, so when you took these breaks, did you speak to your employer and ask for them to give you a sabbatical, or did you feel that you had to resign to be able to actually do the break on your own terms?
Yes, I do think the work-life balance and wellness has really been pushed to the fore. And I think especially with COVID and hybrid working, more and more companies globally, especially multinationals, have policies in terms of sabbaticals. I personally, at the time as a youngster, it was more than 20 years ago when I took the first break, I really felt that I want to invest freely in this NGO space and see how that grows and evolves. And I did speak to the minister at that stage and the deputy director general, and they both felt I'm absolutely throwing this golden career away. But I really felt that I needed to take this time. I needed to invest what I've learned into the NGO space and volunteer my time and see where that leads. And I think what was really remarkable is that everything I learned in that phase, I was able to then in future plow back. And I mean, it still forms part of the golden thread of my career. We come from a position where we're always advising clients. As a lender technical advisor, you advise clients on how to enhance environmental social impact, how to do better socioeconomic development or asset-based community development. But we haven't really been at that grassroots level. We haven't really understood or seen how NGOs have to implement that. And it was wonderful that I could take the opportunity and have that break and invest it back. But to come back to your question, did I feel in any of those three instances that I should go the sabbatical route? I think number one, with government at that stage, I don't think that was an option. At the time, I think there was room for people that would study, you know, let's say I wanted to do my PhD, there would be room for that especially. But I wanted to have a clear break and be able to do this and come back on my own terms. The second was with my son. As I said, you know, I traveled extensively in Africa, but I did not want to leave a baby. Even after 4 months of maternity leave, I did not want to have that burden of having to travel or pause it for a year and then go back to that level of travel. I actually resigned and never took maternity leave, told them that I really value this time. It's a new season. I will always be committed. I will always be loyal, but I really need to take this space alone. And even if I work as an independent consultant, I would do so, but I really want to value and invest in this time. And what, you know, my son was 5 days old when they phoned and said, Batia, can you just review this or can you look at this? And in all honesty, when my son slept, I was looking at documents and reviewing documents and actually continuing, but in my terms, when it was convenient, when it fit around my personal circumstances. In the last instance, when I lost my hearing, I think of all three breaks, suddenly being labeled with a disability, battling in the workplace, battling in meetings, battling in open play settings, because you suddenly have a hearing aid that is picking up literally everything. If somebody is sitting next to you stirring their teacup, you know, that is elevated and nuanced rather than people having a conversation. So that was the most difficult break for me. And I know from a company perspective, they would have given me time to address, to work, you know, with an occupational therapist. But at the time, I was working on the Trans-Adriatic pipeline, working extensively with a team in Albania and in Europe. And I just felt that I would rather pause my career, adjust, look at tools, resources, different ways of working, and then circle back. But I do understand that a lot of people now actually just take a year or two sabbatical and then circle back to their careers.
I didn't have the option of taking a sabbatical. It was, we were going through a massive restructure. So if you're doing a restructure, ask to take time off. I think you're sort of just telling them that you want to leave anyway. Yes. So it wasn't an option for me.
And I can imagine, you know, having to make that choice. At least you then took that ownership and choice in your own hands, and you were able to work out what would it look like and how do you want to structure that. And I think that's also important.
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. I knew that I wasn't going to go back into a full-on corporate career. I wanted to redesign my life, the way I was in the world. So taking a break from corporate would have almost been disingenuous because I wasn't going to come back.
It's never going to look that way.
So you've taken three breaks. Did you have any sort of, with any of them, have any sort of warning that you were going to take the break so that you could do some planning up front? And what did that planning look like?
I think in the first two instances, you know, I had fair warning. At the time, the labor legislation in South Africa was just promulgated. I was working extensively. We were doing the first recognition agreements with SATU Nehawu in the country, groundbreaking work, leading transformation. There were still a lot of strikes and national action. It was at the time when Mandela was released and there was lots of transition. And I really wanted to spearhead that change and development and transformation. And I was also asked, will I be willing to take this labor legislation and demystify it, make it fun, make it understandable so that at a grassroots level and within all tiers, from executive management all the way to your support staff, for them to understand their rights and employee-employee rights, but also how to legally manage the process. So I then, over a period of 6 months, ensured that I train people nationally, that we do training the trainer, that we build capacity skills, we set up a whole office, a whole division, we appointed the first ombudsman. So we made sure that systems, procedures, teams are equipped. Similarly, when my son was born, you know, you have sort of nearly 9 months of warning. And I just knew, you know, and I was really transparent and authentic. And I just indicated that definitely within the season, whether it's 5 years or longer, I really can just not go back into that environment. Everybody used to joke and say that if you are working in a corporate environment, it's never an 8-hour day. If you actually do your work, you're typically working 10 to 12 to 14 hours. So I just knew that I'm not going to be able to go back to that. So I wanted to resign and then work on my own terms. And the only surprise aspect was the third break. Mm-hmm. I think trying to cope, and I think I gave it 3 months. And after 3 months, the ear, nose, and throat specialist sat me down and actually had a hard discussion with me and said, Tia, it's not going to come back. It's not flu that you get over with time or recover. This hearing loss is permanent. And we now need to give you tools and resources to adjust. And I mean, there's just absolutely wonderful stuff. I mean, today we have roaming mics and, you know, you have 20 other resources and equipment that you can use to showcase and make sure that you hear. And I always have team members with me that could just refresh a question, etc., if we're in large meetings. But in terms of planning, I think it really depends on your circumstances. But of course, with a health issue, with a disability, it is a curveball you dealt with. But I do think it's important that you value your health and your body and where you are in your career. And if you need to take a step away, to allow yourself that time to take a step away.
Yeah. For the two times that you had a chance to do a bit of planning, you probably had an idea of what you might do in your break. For me, it was like this fantasy. Okay, I was going to sleep the first month and then I was going to do a lot of exercise and yoga and everything, you know. And some of it that materialized and some of it didn't. For me, the question is, did you have an idea of what you were going to do and did it actually work out that way?
I think in the first instance, definitely in the NGO space, you're now working, you typically do your, let's call it in brackets, your 9-to-5 work, but then we start the negotiations with SATU Nehawu or various aspects at night, and there's always research, new training, new whatever. So you have extended days, you have extended resources, you have international and national teams and networks, and suddenly, despite my biggest plan and biggest dream in the NGO space, I really thought that, you know, life will just continue. You're now going to work in a different space, but you're going to be highly efficient and energized and resources will be there and you will do stuff. And suddenly you're in this NGO that really just, you know, I think those days we were still sending faxes and limited emails. and you suddenly realize that you can't just go to a cupboard. I mean, to take a really practical example, can't just go to a cupboard and these five extra bottles of toner or faxes or whatever. You suddenly just the planning, the logistics, the resources, and then also research, learning from other NGOs, learning from other places of safety or orphanages or capacity building and training. I had to build a new network in that welfare NGO, international NGO and local NGO space. And I need to, you know, in brackets, we call it phone a friend. I need to really learn that if you don't know something, it's really fine. Phone a friend, even if it's cold calling, knock on a door. There's somebody that is a specialist in this area. Go the extra mile, open the doors that's closed, and work with people that know what they are doing and rely on the specialist to be there. So I think the reality again was different, and I had to learn to really work around the space of having a smaller network, smaller resources, and slowly build up to where I'm accustomed. So that was a big adjustment. With my son, I think by the time I gave birth to him, I agree with you. You know, it was really that aspect of, I actually think I was so burned out by the time. I was actually exhausted. So I think sleeping, resting, wellness, exercise, just taking a moment to breathe and enjoy having him there, that really all panned out. But then, of course, you know, there was this calls coming in from work where there was still this need. And I think if I look at it in hindsight, I could have said no. But on the other hand, it kept me connected. And then even when I sort of slowly started working back in 4 years, 5 years later, I knew who I wanted to be and who I did not want to be. And I was very clear that I could take a 25 hours a week commitment, but no more. Because I know that if I commit to, let's say, 5 hours a day, if I work 8 or 10, it's going to be lovely. But if I pretend that I'm taking a full-time contract, I know I'm going to expect myself to work a 16, 14-hour day. And I was not willing to sacrifice what I've gained in terms of flexibility and capacity to train and invest. With the disability break, I had no expectations. I really felt as if my life has come to an end. And I really felt cut off. And I think that is also part of grieving. I grieved for the loss that I've, you know, I just felt my career came to an end. And then slowly started building up and slowly realized, you know what, clients are still phoning you. Clients still need support, review documents. Start with safe spaces where sound, large meetings is not needed, where you can actually still do extensive data analysis, still look at documentation review and build up from there.
So you touched on it a little bit earlier with the first break when you told people you were going to leave, they thought you were giving up this golden career. So with each of your breaks, how did your family and friends and colleagues react when you told them you were going to take a break?
I think the first break, I probably had the most resistance from friends, family, colleagues, because I worked closely with the executive team. I think at that time, we had various government departments working together, and there was a state conference where all the government departments came together. And then at that event, they gave an award for the most likely to succeed, also the person with the most votes within a number of different departments, as somebody wanting, you know, colleagues wanted to work with this person and felt that this person is integral to the way and the department going forward. So at the time, I received that award at this assembly of all government departments. So everybody saw this golden career, and here this woman comes 3 months later, and I told them, you know, I'm obviously going to give a 6 months process. This is where I'm working. I'm not going to leave you. We will do the training. But there was a lot of resistance, and I was busy with my master's at the time, and people really felt I'm throwing this career away. But all of that legal compliance, my commitment to capacity building, my commitment to training has pulled through. In the second instance as well, I ensured that at the time I was in the private sector, I was in a consulting firm, made sure that our team had a large number of long-term projects that they can fall back on. They were equipped. They were trained. There was a lot of capacity building. I think the only time where I think it came as a surprise was obviously with a disability, where people were feeling I should have just taken leave for a month or two, wrapped my head around it and gone back to work, or worked more closely, let's say, with my employer at the time to just take a sabbatical and then come back. But I think I really valued and I've learned to trust my own feeling and in terms of who I want to be and who I need to be at that time. So I think, yes, I've had great resistance in all three instances, but I think it's also a personal journey. You need to be able to listen to that still small voice that's directing you, because ultimately you're going to leave with the results and live with the results.
Yeah, and ultimately in your gut, you know what's the right decision to make. And if you go against that decision, then you can almost feel the resistance in your whole body. Your whole body starts going, no, 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 that's
definitely
not the right choice. So what did you learn from each experience? And what do you wish you did more of?
I think with the first experience, I learned resilience and the fact that there are brilliant people, far more skilled, far more equipped, with far more experience than me out there. It's about knocking on those doors, working with them, collaborating and learning, having that spirit of, I don't know everything and that is also okay, but I can actually engage with people. I can do the research. If I'm willing to put the time and effort in, I can reshape and repurpose what my life looks like and where I want to go and what I value. I think in the second instance as well, the fact that I wanted to really have that season of spending time with my son and making that investment, I think it was good that I allow myself that time. And then also in the last instance, it's good that you listen to that voice and just implement that as well.
So what surprised you the most with each of those experiences? So what was there any sort of surprises where you had like aha moments?
Yes. I think the surprises, especially for me, as I said, is I felt institutionalized in the NGO space after a period. I really missed the wider collaboration, the, let's say, multidimensional teams and the wider networks. So I think that for me was a big miss. The aha moment was the fact that I could really build and learn in capacity and also what you can do with less. You know, I really had to learn to work around financing, looking at blended financing, public-private partnerships. So that was really a great moment. And then I think in the other two instances, the aha moment is that you can actually come back a better person because of this experience. So if you allow yourself, I always refer to it as sort of a, well, everybody that knows me know I'm a bit of a coffeeholic. But if I have a beautiful steaming mug of coffee and somebody says, Tia, I'm really thirsty, I will have enough to share. But if I don't take a moment to fill my cup and it becomes empty and emptier and emptier, and in the end there's nothing in it, I will not have anything to share. So for me, it was really important to know that, you know, I always say in your career, you can see times where your cup is becoming depleted or less and less and less. And we don't listen to those warning signs. The lesson I had to learn is, you saw the mug going emptier and emptier and emptier, and you did not respond. If I look at in Cameroon when I became ill, it was probably a combination of burnout and your immune system just crashing and you not being able to cope with everything and, you know, making you more susceptible for a viral infection. But I think it's so important to, if my cup is empty, I really have nothing to share. Whether it's with well-meaning friends, with family, with colleagues, you will not have anything to share. So I need to pause, stop, fill my cup, and make sure I have enough to spill over into other people's lives.
Yeah, I think that's a really valuable lesson to learn. Yeah, we're almost expected to always give for others, you know, and you can't really give to others unless you yourself are operating on all cylinders. Yeah, you have to look after yourself. And I think there must be a healthy balance between looking after yourself and looking after others. And you must decide which is when, you know, when do you look after that?
Yeah.
Did you find any time for like introspection and reflection while you were on your breaks? And what did that look like for you?
Oh, definitely. I think for me, I really believe in sort of a whole body where you have to take time out to breathe. I always say smell the roses, but here in Cape Town, we walk on the mountain. Go for long hikes, just be in nature, allow yourself time to just look after, not just wellness. I'm not talking about taking time in the gym. I'm just taking time in terms of just being active, whatever that means for you, whether it is going out sailing on a yacht, whether it is walking along the beach, whether it is going to the gym, but just take that time out. So I was able to really look at health and well-being. I was able to travel more because literally if you have your laptop, you can travel anywhere. Can work anyway. These days, you don't even need to take your laptop. You take your phone. And just to realize that whether I sit at the beach and spend the whole day outside enjoying the sunlight, enjoying the beautiful weather, time with my family, and then come back and work at night, the typical day-night shift does not need to happen. You can make it work the way you want to. So it was really good to be able to take a moment away and look at what does a work day look like? What does health and wellness look like? What level of activity can I increase? How can I be more fit and travel and have experiences that's meaningful to me, that will edify me and actually help me redefine where I wanted to be in my career and in my life? And I think most importantly, it also gave me time to do research. We don't always sharpen the sword. You know, there's that joke about the axe and the guy next to you is going to be able to hack the tree down quicker than you because his axe is sharper. And it happens so quickly in a corporate environment where you work and you work and you work and you don't have time for conferences. You don't have time for training. You don't have time for reflection. You just keep working. I think it's so important to take the time out to research. It doesn't even need to be research in your specific field. It could be in other areas that you want to explore. So definitely, I think, well, as a researcher, obviously that is one of the things that I've loved the most. But yeah, take the time out to explore other avenues that may not have been your A, B, or C career when you were in your 20s.
Yeah, and those skills might even help you in your current career, because I think most of the solutions in this day and age lay on the intersections between disciplines. You've taken three breaks and you've come back three times into the workforce again. So each time you came back, did you go into a similar job again, or did you do something completely different, or maybe you were completely different?
I think it's sort of a combination. I think in the first instance, I didn't go back to the public sector. I went into the private sector. And it was a situation where somebody phoned me and indicated that they really have a problem. It was a land reform project. And they did not have somebody with the sufficient commitment and skill in terms of from a data analysis, but also to do the research and the stakeholder engagement at that level of really building cohesion and trust and working and really wanting to get to the heart and the authentic granularity of what that community was experiencing. And did I want to take it at the moment? No, I love research, but I didn't see that as a career evolving. And the one project led to the next, and before I knew it, I was supporting private sector and really looking at first social performance and social research and social impact. And that then progressed over time, because you can't really be in that space and not look at governance and not then look at the wider sustainability aspects as well. So I think that whole legal thread that I started with and the care for labor and labor relations and community development, that then involved in helping private sector clients understand that whole landscape of how you can enhance social impact, not just labor and workforce, but also from a community perspective. So that was actually lovely to see how that evolved me, was adding value. And then after my son, I think it was still very much in that LTA role or social impact assessment or an environmental impact assessment role that have evolved into more of a lender technical advisory role. And then lastly, even after the disability, I think that thread stayed with me. But I then, strangely enough, for somebody with a hearing disability, focused to a larger extent on communication, because I realized how important, as a person with a hearing disability, communication is, stakeholder engagement is, partnerships is, and how to evolve that. So the refined, refreshed me had a lived experience as a person with a disability, and I wanted to look at diversity, equity, and inclusion with a different lens. I weren't only advising clients on how you can enhance social impact. I had that lived experience of, but what are you doing in your workforce, within your own companies, and also then in your communities to enhance inclusion of women or vulnerable groups or youth or people with disabilities? And to what extent is it sort of a tick box checklist exercise versus authentically understanding the challenges they face and the accommodations you could do? I think I've, because of the research I did with my second break and third break, I really understood far greater, you know, the role that human resources can play in providing accommodations, in providing a more equitable workforce, and how to really transform companies and communities within Africa. My heart and my passion is in Africa. And being able to plow that back and to advising clients and even looking, I mean, a lot of companies come to me and say, but yeah, you know, we've got a lovely balanced workforce. You know, this is our numbers. And then they would only focus on ethnicity or gender, for example. But they don't really understand the granularity or complexity. And they haven't really had authentic discussions with their teams. So I think it's really important to look at that. And I personally feel that Thea of today is a completely different person than the Thea that took her first break late in her 20s, because I've evolved and grown, and each of these breaks have actually added great value to my life.
Yeah, it sounds like you had very specific lessons you learned from each of these breaks, and maybe even cultivated some practices during those breaks to make you a different person. So I sort of call that the sabbatical mindset. You know, you in that sabbatical, you learn some lessons there, you maybe learn some new habits. And how have you made sure that you bring those lessons and habits back into your workplace so you don't forget about them?
I think it's so important. I think even now, I must say, MPA Mod has been really, really great. And Marlene started, I think it was 27 years ago now, the first women-owned engineering and development company in South Africa. So she's always been spearheading transformation and development in this sort of male-dominated engineering built environment, and collaborating with her, working with her, and helping her company transition and grow has been truly remarkable. And from day one, we agreed that I do not want to give up the things I value. I value my time, I value flexibility, I value the fact that I can travel, I value the fact that I can do research, plow back, sharpen the sword. And even with that, I amended and were clear in the negotiations with my contract time. Mm-hmm. So I actually have adjusted remuneration and benefits and incentives around giving me more flexibility and time. So I would rather have more leave days, for example, in brackets, leave days to do research, to present, to speak, to be able to assist other companies to grow, to develop, than just be restricted to X number of leave days because from a legal standpoint that is required as a minimum requirement. So I adjusted my own contracts going forward, and also with clients, we build it in, even with my own team. We've got a hybrid working environment. You know, for me, it's about your end product. So if you are working on a research report, if you have to get something done, how you juggle your day and how you manage your day. Yes, we do have core days. We typically try to come into the office 2 days a week for connectivity, for cohesion, for collaboration. It remains core to what we do. But you actually trust people to get on and do their work and do it well. So I think I've been able to instill a lot of those principles mm-hmm. in our own company at the moment, and also helping other companies to have a more agile hybrid working environment where you give flexibility. I mean, we've had a lot of the men come back to us post-COVID and saying, Tia, it's been remarkable. You know, I used to leave at 5 o'clock in the morning, come back late at night, basically kiss my child goodnight. That was the extent of my involvement during the week. Now I've been able to have breakfast with them, take them to school, work, go and fetch them, have lunch with them, work. And then when they go to bed, I circle back to my computer. And it's not a problem. But I actually feel that I'm more connected to my children, to their lives. I'm able to tell everybody, guys, I'm going to go and watch the soccer game now. And we all applaud you because you're involved, you're present. And I know that come Friday, if we need to give a deliverable into a client, it's going to be done exquisitely because you have the flexibility to have time for what you value as well. Mm. So I think it's really important that we don't lose that when we come back, that we don't take a sabbatical or have a break, and then we just go back and we don't take those lessons into the day and week and month and year we want in the future.
So you mentioned briefly burnout, and burnout is one of the things that I'm hearing over and over again. It's almost as if people push themselves right to the limit before realizing I actually need to take a break. You know, you almost have to collapse completely, and your body has to give in before you go, okay, I should be taking this break. So what are you doing now to make sure that you don't get to that state again? So it's sort of, can you read the signs? Have you learned to read the signs and to make sure that you're looking after yourself so that you don't get back into that space again? And do you have any advice for others who might be nearing that limit?
Yes. I think it comes back to what you said earlier, Petra, where you mentioned in terms of people just really listening to their gut. You know yourself and you see the warning bells going on, you know, in the morning when you suddenly feel like, oh my goodness, do I have to get up? How do I get through this week? You start living for weekends. You really, where you typically would quickly pop something out, it suddenly takes you an hour to write the most mundane letter, or it takes you longer to finish a report or a design, or to complete tasks, or you're losing concentration, or you just realize that it takes you longer to complete the same things. You have more brain fog. You are tired. Often when I speak to people, they say, oh, I've noticed, you know, now that I think about it, I've had flu more often. I've had sick days more often. It's difficult for me to get up on a Monday. It's difficult for me to finish a Friday. So please listen to your bodies. I think it's so, so important to listen to your gut, to see the warning signs and to put systems in place and measures in place and to take the time out and to be honest with the people around you if you do need to take the time out. You know, a lot of the people I speak to save their leave until the end of the year to have a proper break, but to go the whole year without a break is actually not sustainable, you know, and we then encourage people to look at in each quarter to take a little bit of time out and to not just be at home. Sometimes people say, Tia, I'm so tired, I'm just going to take 2 days to sleep, which is also fine. But sometimes changing your physical environment as well, go and visit a friend, go and visit family that stay in a different country or stay in a different province. Sometimes just getting out of your house as well, because we fall into habits in our own homes. We tend to go back to our laptops or our office space that we now sort of post-COVID made in our homes. So don't get into that habit of saying, I've got a break, but oops, I'm just quickly going to scroll through and answer 20 emails. If your body is tired, take the time out. Put in the leave days, have the rest periods, and if you need to take longer time, I've seen now where people have said, you know what, I may need to run out of leave, and I may have to actually take 1 or 2 days unpaid leave. And it's also okay to juggle it, to move things around, to give yourself the freedom. We've also seen where people would say, you know what, I'm going to take half days of leave. I am going to take every Friday afternoon off this month, which is 2 days effectively, but just to allow myself to feel I've got a bit of a long weekend. Or we encourage our teams as well, if there's public holidays, to look at the annual calendar and to say, okay, but if I take this Friday or this Monday or this Tuesday, I actually make a longer long weekend for myself and give myself a solid break. So I think it's about planning as well and being honest with yourself if you see the warning signs.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my whole fantasy was about sleeping for a whole month, which almost happened. I got out of sleep the first month, which was great. So do you think you'll take a sabbatical again? And what would you do differently next time?
I think I've been spoiled. I mean, quite honestly, I've had 3 breaks. So, you know, I cannot really say whether I'm going to need another sabbatical. At the moment, I feel so energized. I think I'll probably run for the next 10 years before proper, you know, the need for a next reshape or a next reshuffle. Do I think I'll do it again? Yes, at a heartbeat. It's made me the person I am today. And it's really made me a well-rounded person. I'm far more authentic, far more honest. I have far more greater empathy for people that are going through struggles. Mm-hmm. I really grew up in an environment where, I shouldn't say we weren't authentic, but everybody, success looked like a person that was a bit of a workaholic that just worked. Mm. It was work first, family last. And we really grew up in that space where you work. If you know, we used to joke that whether your body is exhausted, whether you have flu, you're going to be in the office, you're going to work. And that's not sustainable and it's not healthy. And what I really appreciate about intergenerational teams is they will just, I mean, our younger teams will just come to you up front and they want to work for companies that value wellness, that value balance. So I don't think it's sustainable and you have to listen to your body. So definitely, do I want to do the next sabbatical? Not immediately, but will I do it again? Definitely at a heartbeat.
So is there anything else you'd like to mention that we haven't spoken about yet?
Yes, I think it's really important to plan, to make sure that you put finances aside, you know, whether you're going to tap into savings or investments, but try to always plan ahead so that ideally you have put money aside, whether it's 3 months' salary, whether it's a year's salary, you know, try to have savings, try to at least put a pocket aside. Should you want to take a month sabbatical, a 3 month sabbatical, a year sabbatical? So plan for it already and then make sure that you look at that rest period where you can just allow yourself not to start doing, not to start performing, where you just let your hair down, and whether it's sleeping or doing absolutely nothing but reading 50 books or binge watching series, that's horrible, but that just goes into that, you know, no brain zone. Do that. But then also start slowly building and looking at your recovery and your realignment. Start looking at who do you want to be in the next phase? What should you do differently? And have a soft re-entry. A lot of people are saying, was the re-entry hard? I think people that go from sort of a zero phase to a suddenly a full-time, let's call it in brackets, a 9-to-5 corporate career, will definitely battle. Try to see if you can stagger it. Try and see if you can shape it differently, that you commit a certain number of hours for a year or two, and then slowly build up to where you want to be or where you find that that is your sweet spot. This is the number of hours you comfortably want to work in a week. So I think it's important to just look at your return to work as well.
I think that's very valuable advice. I mean, I had to work with a financial advisor to make sure that I could actually afford to take some time off. And I think I'm a big, big, big fan of coaches. So, and so he's coached me through doing the financial stuff right. And then I'm coaching myself to do the reflection and all of that. And then, of course, also coaching myself for a big physical challenge I'm doing at the end of the year as well. So I do believe I think it's good to speak to people and to listen to advice as well as you go along.
Just from a coaching point, mm-hmm. I 100%, you need mentors and coaches in your life. You know, one person will help you with business and your career. Others will look at your personal goals. Others will look at fitness or spiritual goals. But make sure you have different mentors and coaches that help you through the process. As I said, phone a friend, phone people that specialize in this, because there is support, and invest in your future by making sure you have the right coaches and mentors available.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you very much for your time today. It's been lovely to talk to you. Thanks for joining me in the studio.
Thanks so much for the opportunity, and all the best for your next phase and your physical challenge at the end of the year. We look forward to seeing the next season.
Thanks, Tia.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.